Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the British Royal Fanatic Podcast. I'm Hayden, your American friend with a passion for British royal history. If you enjoy royal media, in addition to current events and history within the British royal family, then you have found your home. If you could please take a moment, hit that bell icon, hit that subscribe button down below, so that way you can stay up to date on all things happening here on the channel. A lot has happened since we last met. The big thing is the funeral has since happened. Operation London Bridge, Operation Unicorn, Operation Spring Tide have all gone on without a hitch, at least what appears to be without a hitch. The funeral happened, and the reign of Queen Elizabeth II has officially come to a close, and King Charles III is trying to do his best, but the world has begun to move on. The UK is officially out of mourning now. The royal family is observing another week of official mourning. They're not really doing many engagements. They're taking their time to sort of, actually grieve now and take time with their family. But it's been a while since we met. It's been a short while. I got really overwhelmed with trying to keep up with the constant pressure to keep putting out short things, as updates were happening. And that is something that here at the podcast is not really something that we do. We do longer form content. We sort of extrapolate and discuss and reflect. And that's not really things, blow by blow. Yes, that was on Twitter. I've been popping off on Twitter. I will say that. And please, if you haven't officially subscribed to the Twitter page, link is down below in the description box. But yeah, the entire week of official mourning, the Queen's funeral, everything happening within the royal family, I did post updates on Twitter, but here actually making long form content, I got very overwhelmed because it's not the type of content that we do. It's just not. We do longer podcasts. So the video I did put out, I did, two videos. I did, the, oh my goodness, she's gone, initial reaction, sort of processing, whoa. Then my what to expect next, which most of that video still holds up. There's only one part of that video where I give a timeline, a perspective timeline at that time of, what to expect. Here's the general timeline of things. And I was really only off by a day, but still, my timeline was off. My timeline was off very quickly, and things kept changing, and it got to be pretty overwhelming to try to keep up with things as they were happening. And there were so many news outlets covering it that if you really, truly wanted to follow it, there were a multitude of reporters and other royal accounts that were doing a much better job of it than I was. And I would like to give just specific shout-outs to @NotARoyalExpert, @KinseySchofield, @MattaFact, and @MessyKondo during that whole week. We've had some wonderful discourse, except with MattaFact. She's on TikTok, and I'm not on TikTok, but @NotARoyalExpert and @KinseySchofield, you guys were wonderful keeping me up to date, and the discourse and fun we were having back and forth, I really appreciate both of you and hope to do something with you in the future. I know @NotARoyalExpert, I follow you on TikTok on my personal account. I don't have a British Royal Fanatic podcast account. I follow you on my personal account. But I've enjoyed the discourse we've been having. And if you don't already follow these four accounts, go ahead and do so on Twitter and on TikTok. MattaFact's not on Twitter anymore. She left Twitter, which I can understand. But I still support her. I still appreciate her viewpoints. I appreciate everybody's viewpoint. But what are we doing today? So today we're going to take time to reflect. We are going to reflect, and officially from America over here. America was really wild this past week and a half dealing with the Queen's death and funeral, really just processing feelings and just having a big, just like a wrap-up discussion. That's the big thing today. Highlights, what stood out, what were really big, powerful moments. Social media was really, really wild during this whole week. And sort of what to expect next, because there's some things that are in the works now. But before we get into the larger part of today, let me know down below in the comments, what were some moments during the past week and a half that stood out to you, whether positive or negative? What stood out to you? And I'd like to continue that discussion down below. So yeah, what stood out to you? So in America, during this entire time, and I'm in the Midwest, I'm in the state of Indiana, and it was truly weird, processing it in real time because, one, here where I'm in Indiana, there, in terms of print media, nothing changed. It was as if nothing had happened. It is, and now finally we're starting to get the memorial tribute. It shows how behind we are. Her funeral has already since happened. Her, all those tributes have already done, and we are just now beginning to get that type of print media here. So that's just one thing to point out. We were so behind the ball where I am and just kind of not acknowledging it. In fact, I even posted on Twitter, I found another Jubilee magazine to add to my collection, and, you know, to announce that she had been dead for a few days now. So the only way we got updates about this was from traditional news sources such as MSNBC, NBC, Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, really any traditional news outlet. And of course, you could, if you had access to it, I did, you could watch it on BBC. I know I had BBC on pretty much for 3 days straight. Google had their various live streams out of, you know, the front gates of Balmoral, actually at Westminster, where the Queen was laying in state, various places where she was laying in state and the certain ceremonies. You know, there were live streams available and traditional news media would sort of cut. But here in America, we really didn't acknowledge too much of this, which was weird. America really covered the funeral and discussed the funeral in two main camps. There was either the first camp, which was taking moment. Even if you didn't particularly agree or like the royal family, they'd still take a moment, express sympathy, would have little bits of updates throughout, and of course, would be respectful. But then there'd be the other camp of coverage, especially mainly on social media, where you were letting your opinions run wild. And of course, at this point, you know, you have your opinion, you're allowed to express it. I'm not here to tell you what to say or what to not say. But those were those two specific camps. Either we're going to just express sympathy, say, wow, this must really hurt for the nation losing such a big figure. Your family lost, you know, their center. Now someone, you know, the whole balance of the family's off temporarily. And having to deal with that very publicly. Or expressing a lot of negativity, negative thoughts. There were a lot of tweets that were going wild, and there's going to be one showcased over here that really took a lot of brunt of things and really sort of kickstarted a lot of other conversations. And again, this person is entitled to their own opinion. I can't tell them what to say or what to not say. I'd say we're calling out, or at least acknowledging, the colonizer past. They were calling out racism. They were calling out just, why do we care? This isn't our government. Why are we spending so much time over here addressing this when it's not our country? It's not. Are there, and those that were sympathetic, such as myself, you know, I engaged what I could, but there were a lot of negativity. There was a lot of animosity now towards Charles and to William and Catherine. There were two camps with Harry and Meghan. There was a lot of other press stirred up that, again, was really negative. There were a lot of negative hashtags towards Harry and Meghan that were going around. There were a lot of ones, just a lot of hashtags trending about, you know, the Queen's gone, she's gone, you know, happy that she's gone. And one thing I will say, this, it made me very uncomfortable seeing all of that. And so, you know, I didn't participate. You don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. You know, we're taking away from the true heart of the matter here, which is that the Queen is dead. The, you know, heart of the nation is gone. 70 years, we're really blindsided by it. At least us over here, how it's presented to us here in America, just kind of happened out of nowhere. And of course, the, what they've named themselves, the Sussex Squad, were getting really, really aggressive towards just either anybody that would interact with them. I remember they got me a few times, which, again, they're entitled to their own opinion, but America really didn't cover this a whole lot until it was actually the funeral. At that point, the day of the funeral, that was all the media coverage that was here. And even then, it was really early in the morning. I remember trying to wake up as early as I can, and I caught the middle of it, and then, you know, went and rewound and watched what I could. But America was really these two camps. Either we're going to be sympathetic and, you know, acknowledge, hi, this is painful for you, extending sympathies, my condolences go out, or it was this really aggressive camp over here expressing a lot of negativity, a lot of just hurtful, hateful comments. Some of the ones that really, that I sort of giggled at were when, of course, a highlight that I'll get to is when Charles officially acknowledged and bestowed the title of Prince and Princess of Wales to William and Catherine. And at that point, everybody was, especially over here in this camp, going how there's only one Princess of Wales and it is only Princess Diana. She will be the only Princess of Wales. And completely denying that Catherine is the new Princess of Wales, and or how, you know, our own Princess of Wales is Meghan over here, which again, their opinion, not telling them they can't feel that, but just that really this confusion of, do you understand how this title works? You know, it's a gift to the heir apparent, and it is to acknowledge the heir apparent, and it is a very big responsibility, and, you know, we can't change the line of succession. Line of succession is where it is. Harry's where he is. And there's a lot of those animosities, which we'll get to in a few moments, but that is how the funeral was covered here in America, where it really wasn't acknowledged or talked about until they absolutely had to. And news anchors, reporters were in a multitude of camps. Some of them were annoyed about covering it and did it the best, you know, as minimal as they could. Some, you know, did as much as they could. It was really touch and go over here in America, especially where I am here in Indiana. You know, of course, local news didn't cover it at all. It was only the national news level. But one thing I do want to talk about that now is beginning to happen in this reflection is, in my opinion, Harry and Meghan got a lot of unnecessary attention, and you could tell they were kind of getting uncomfortable with it. And the body language expert, I'll put him right here, he sort of pointed out of reading their body language and breaking things down, how anxious and how uncomfortable Harry and Meghan were, which could be underlying family tensions that haven't been resolved. Meghan really wasn't very social in this. She was just by Harry's side, supporting her husband, doing what she could to support him, to be there for him. She was, you know, very dutiful to him. And I know at times my coverage has been a little bit skewed and unfair because I let my own personal opinions come out. But they did the best they could, and they got a lot of, in my opinion, a lot of unnecessary attention. And news outlets sort of are now pointing out, this was a little skewed here. They got a little too much attention. And I personally think that it's not helping their cause. It's not helping things. It's not helping truly either what they want to do, what the firm wants to do, keep reiterating these same storylines, this same trauma, as I've sort of talked about before, where Meghan seems to be rehashing and keeping this same storyline going. You know, when are we going to move on? But also, when are we, the media, when are we going to move on and let the firm officially move on? Let Harry and Meghan move on and write their own storyline. So there's a lot of mixed feelings here, but I feel like they got a lot of unnecessary attention that took away from getting the matter at hand, remembering the queen, honoring the queen, paying respects to the queen. And I know the media is doing their job, I'm doing my job, but I just feel, in sharing a little bit of more personal opinion, that they got a little bit unnecessary attention that took away from the moment. And it felt they were in these moments where she's lying in state. There's, you know, Charles is over here doing his constitutional duties, going on his tour of the Big Four, England, Wales, Scotland, and Northern Ireland. He's doing his duties, meeting with MPs, meeting with prime ministers, other members of the Commonwealth. The Queen's by his side. The family's doing what they can to mourn internally and also do their duties to the country. And it was all during this sort of downtime where, you know, the Queen's over here. Family's over here. We're not really seeing too much of them except when they're out there. What do we report on? Nothing's really happening. But I feel like they got a lot of attention. And Gail and Oprah, too, got a lot of both positive and negative attention with their associations with Harry and Meghan. They got a lot of negative attention in terms of marketing off of this and taking advantage of this situation. Why are you doing this? You know, why it's a lot of negative attention, which I don't really have opinions on them. They're reporters and have much more successful careers than I have. But to put a button on this tangent here, I just feel like they got a lot of unnecessary attention that very visibly took away from reporting and acknowledging the Queen. What were some things that stood out during this week and a half? What were some really powerful moments? What were really some really poignant moments that helped shape this week of transition between monarchs. And the first one, of course, within the first 24 hours, the speech by King Charles III acknowledging, again, basically it was his own eulogy and way to honor his mother, the queen. The one bombshell in that speech that everybody talked about is when he officially bestowed and gave the title of Prince of Wales to William, making William and Catherine the new prince and Princess of Wales. He explicitly said Princess of Wales. Let's talk about that. Let's break that down. So, of course, upon the death of the queen and Charles becoming king, someone always wears the crown. All of Charles's titles when he was Prince of Wales reverted to the crown, except for a few. A few of them were hereditary that passed directly to William. The big ones being the Dukedom of Cornwall, the Dukedom of Rothesay, which is the dukedoms that are given to the heir apparent. These were just natural, and they moved fast. Whoever was running William and Catherine's social media, tip my hat to you, individual, whoever you are. You moved fast. Faster than I could ever imagine. And I bet right now you're enjoying, everything being calm now. But William wasn't automatically given Prince of Wales. We had already talked about that and what to expect next. That is something that has to be given. Well, I participated in a few discussions on Twitter of when do we think this is going to happen? We all know it's going to happen. It's, he is to be the new Prince of Wales. When do we think he's going to give the actual, bestowing the gift? When do we think the investiture ceremony is going to happen? And my opinion was, this is going to happen after the funeral. They're going to do their constitutional duties and responsibilities, give their speeches, make their statements, but this type is, we're not going to see this until after the funeral. And then, of course, the investiture ceremony will probably be after the coronation, because the investiture ceremonies and the coronations don't have to happen immediately. There's some time. Of course, Charles's coronation has been planned for years, and the investiture for William and Catherine as Prince and Princess of Wales, again, doesn't need to happen right away. Charles was invested as Prince of Wales in 1969, but he was given the title in the late 50s. I believe he was actually made Prince of Wales in 1958 when he was 10. And then he was officially invested as Prince of Wales in 69 when he was 21. So, again, it doesn't need to happen right away. The timelines now are a little loose. But I fully thought this was going to happen weeks out. No, it happened in less than 48 hours after Queen Elizabeth II passed away. And why did he do this? Continuity. And a matter of, we need a Prince of Wales. He was a matter of continuity. We're going to have this immediately. We're not going to have any speculation. We're not going to wait. We're just going to get it done. We're going to do it. And he did it in a very wonderful way. In his speech, he also, paid tribute to Meghan and Harry and, extended what appeared to be some form of olive branch. But the first big point that stood out was, of course, Charles's speech. It was very touching. I started to cry during it. And William and Catherine being made Prince and Princess of Wales. That was something not a lot of us were anticipating that was going to happen so soon. But it happened. The investiture ceremony will be happening soon. And so on and so forth. The next one is sort of the olive branches that were extended at the beginning of this week. And then how everything became really distant with Meghan and Harry. And of course, William and Harry and the spouses, Catherine and Meghan. Harry was the last one to know that the queen had, at least going up there, that the queen had was ill and was either dead or dying. And I believe if my internal timeline is correct, it was announced that she had died while he was still on his way to Balmoral. He arrived separately from everybody else. The king gave sentiments in his speech, expressing love and support of their life overseas. And William and Catherine extended the invitation for them to participate in the walkabout at Windsor Castle. And that really it gave us false hope that things are going to remedy, things are going to get better. It's not going to happen, at least not right now. There's too much going on. Meghan's podcasts have all been recorded, and I believe some of them are actually going to be re-recorded. Harry's book is pretty much done. If they've done any press or interviews, those are already wrapped. And so there's this package that is already done of what they're going to do. And one of the things that they keep doing is whether they're true or not, whether or not that's not what we're here to talk about, is they say some negative things about the firm, about the family. And if they're true or not, that's for us to discuss in another podcast. But there's, you know, negative things being said over here. There's also negative experiences happening over here. And it seemed like this was a way for them to build the bridge and try to work on things. And we're seeing that that wasn't the case. And it seems like things are even more distant now. They're even colder. And, you know, in the media, Harry and Meghan really can't do anything right. You know, when you look objectively here at what was being told, you know, again, these news stories over here that they're told they can't salute, they're told they can't do this, they told they can't do that. But on the other side of the coin is Charles made it clear that working royals can only do ABC. And, you know, Harry and Andrew aren't working royals anymore. They were, but they're not. So there's a line that was drawn that rubbed everybody the wrong way. Everybody had opinions about, you know, he should be able to do ABC. Well, the king has made it clear, if you're not a working royal, you can't do this. Harry's not a working royal. You see where they tried. But again, as the body language expert said, you know, things are happening, discussions are happening, opinions aren't being talked about. And also, it's really soon. It's so soon to be having these conversations. The Queen's, you know, hasn't even been on the ground for a week yet. And we're already trying to talk about this and this and that, when just let them grieve. Have your time, have your moments, you know. But it seemed like they were really trying, and then it failed. Probably arguments happened. But the body language expert was really helpful in all this time when they were going on walkabouts, being public, and the family being there, being able to read truly, you know, reading body language is something that's really powerful in times like this. Reading it and being able to, you know, understand the subtext of behaviors. And he was really helpful in terms of going, nope, they're not on good terms. They are not liking each other. You know, they're being very vulnerable right now. You can clearly tell that they've been crying. You can clearly tell ABC 123. So he was really helpful to follow, and I really appreciated his viewpoints in terms of, you know, what's going on here, what's this, you know, reading the body language. It's something that's really powerful with the family. And you could tell, which is continuing my suspicions of all of this, is there's always more happening behind the scenes than what we, the public, get privy to. And this was another example of that. A last few highlights that just crushed me. Seeing Zara upset at Balmoral and just being very vulnerable. Zara Tindall, I wanted to give her a hug. I really wanted to give her a hug. Princess Anne, through all of this, Princess Anne has become my hero. I have always really respected Princess Anne. She's always really intimidated me. She's so no-nonsense. She's so truly does not care what anybody thinks and is there to do a job. She's always been really cool. She always has such really cool stories. I've always really respected her, but I've been really intimidated by her. This week, my respect for her and admiration for her could not be higher. She refused to leave the Queen's side. She was there the entire time. She was there, you know, she would curtsy to her, these really deep curtsies to her mom in her coffin, was there doing her duty the entire time, now supporting Charles, supporting mom. Just Princess Anne has always been a badass, but now she has my truly deep respect, and I could not respect her more from this. I want to kind of pat her on the back and go, hey, if you need anything, you know, call me. Because she doesn't seem like someone who likes hugs and likes that type of physical attention. But just kind of pat her on the back, go, hey, if you need anything, I'll be over here. I know you're a very private person. But could not respect Princess Anne any more than what I already do. And the last one that stood out that truly broke my heart is when the Queen was on her procession on her way to Windsor Castle to officially have her final ceremony for family and friends, and then officially be interred. Two things happened. Her corgis were there, and her horse was there. And if you look closely at the horse has one of her headscarves on it. And it's processing through where all the flowers are with people leaving things. And it was truly that moment. Those moments broke my heart. Those moments truly just kind of ripped my heart in two. And of course, one of the the last really powerful one was seeing the lines for the queues, seeing people line up, you know, 17, 18, 19 hours of waiting, and all the different, you know, like where you're in an airport, all the different, you know, it's snaking back on one another, and seeing all those queues, and, you know, following at not a royal expert as, you know, he waited to queue up to pay his respects. And also the drama of those two news anchors that jumped the queue and were there, didn't have to wait. But then David Beckham was in line, like just shooting the breeze with it, with everybody and having fun. And just that of the true over in the country, you know, even over there in the UK, everybody had mixed opinions about it, but everybody still took a moment to pay their respects and queue up. And it was wonderful to see. Some light things that stood out was, of course, the sartorial messages, being portrayed through either the royal women or the royal, or actually now the royal men. The protocol that happened this past week went off wonderfully, went off without a hitch, is very beautiful. The pageantry mixed with very personal moments to where it felt more than just a state funeral with all pomp and circumstance. It truly felt very personal. It felt wonderful. The wreath of flowers that were on her coffin for the last one were the same flowers that were used in her wedding bouquet that were pulled from the same gardens from there. So that really personal touch. The vigil of the princes, the vigil of the grandchildren were very powerful. And it was truly, you know, it's, we always talk about we're getting fatigued with historic moments happening around us. This was another historic moment. See, especially the vigil of the princes, the vigil of the grandchildren. Lord Severn, James Viscount Severn, the youngest son of Edward and Sophie, being 14, going out there and holding vigil with his other cousins. That's not easy. That's not easy. And he made it look very easy. And you could see that Sophie and Edward were proud that he was able to stand up there and do his duty to the country. My heart breaks for the family in terms of this is something very private. This is something very personal. And they had to be so public with it. They had to be so vulnerable with it and couldn't really mourn in real time. Charles really couldn't mourn in real time because he had so many constitutional obligations to do. And you could tell he was getting frustrated with the pens and moving things. And it's just, it's, you know, you could tell he's grieving. He was upset. One last point I want to hit on is how overwhelming this felt and why so many people, especially sort of commentators now, are like taking a few days or a week to sort of collect themselves and then come back to it is the death of Queen Elizabeth II came at us like a ton of bricks. It was very much, I remember getting the news alert that Thursday morning of, you know, the Queen is ill and family members are going to go see her, when, you know, 2 days ago we just saw her, she was smiling, she was fine. Yes, she had a bruise on her hand that looked like it was from like a medicine, IV drip, some sort of, I remember my grandma having those types, similar types of bruises. But it was just, she's fine, she's having mobility issues, but no, we're kind of doing this, and then all of a sudden, bottomed out, and she's gone. It was very blindsided. It was very much a surprise, which brings us into, this brings up this question, truly, how sick was she? You know, the status of her really began around 2019, but even you could cite maybe 2017, 2018 of her health, you know, with Philip officially retiring from service in 2017, and, you know, you could visibly see him deteriorating. Now, again, around that same time, we sort of see the Queen beginning to deteriorate a little bit. And, you know, ever since then, her diary had been just slowly, slowly pulling back to the point where she didn't have many in-person engagements anymore. Or if she did, it was always with someone, either with Camilla, with Catherine, with Harry, or with Charles, or with Philip when he was active. But she never really truly went alone somewhere. It was always with someone. And the solo engagements, really, again, they were scaling everything back very slowly. And the biggest thing that she said was mobility issues. We will truly never know, in my opinion, what did her in. And if we do know, it won't be during my lifetime. the Jubilee, her Platinum Jubilee, many, the body language expert even said this was sort of a way for her to say goodbye to the country, to say goodbye to the UK. Because notice, after her Jubilee, we really didn't see her much. We saw social media posting things and her doing her job and her engagements and her things, but we really visibly began to see her start to, like, hey, ho, ho, around, you know, 2019, 2020. And, you know, when Philip died in 2021, you know, it's, she really began, you know, the deterioration really began to become visible. She began to lose weight. The osteoporosis really began to truly show. And there's things that we don't know. There was something, there had to have been something going on that we will never know. But this felt really overwhelming. This funeral felt really blindsided, because her health is something that they really didn't talk about, unless it was truly you needed to know. You know, they finally released Queen Victoria's diaries that you can actually read online. But even then, they're edited, because her daughter, Princess Beatrice, edited them and took things out and, you know, is trying to portray her mother a certain way. So even then, we will never know truly Queen Victoria's diaries. But they have been made, you know, 100-some years after her death. You know, we truly, you know, the Queen Elizabeth II has a videotape for Australia to be played in 2085, 100 years after that. You know, the firm is really big on releasing these things after enough generations have passed. And this is another instance where, during my lifetime, I highly doubt we will ever know the Queen's cause of death. They'll probably keep that under lock and key. I'd heard the BBC speculating, was it a stroke? Was it a heart attack? Could she have possibly had cancer? We will never know. But mobility issues that they were citing is not enough to do someone in that quickly and that aggressively. So something probably was going on. But we come to the end of today's sort of hodgepodge discussion, reflecting how aggressive the media was, how here in America, there wasn't a lot of reporting. I had to look to outside sources and other people that were truly there or are at a high enough level engaging in things, where me, the average person, we really had to search out and look for it. And in fact, news sources were posting about how frustrated they were that they had to cover it, and that America really had two opposite camps, either showing sympathy or a lot of animosity and saying a lot of really hurtful things to Harry and Meghan, William and Catherine, the King, the Queen Consort, Camilla, they're just the firm institution itself. There was a lot of people sharing their opinions that really began to drown out, and you could really get lost in that, in those arguments, which is where I tried my best to really pull my head out from there and try to stay objective here. Charles has an uphill battle now. Sort of last statements, he's in the process of slimming down the monarchy, really trying to redefine what it means to be a working royal. He has legislation he's trying to put in place to change who's his counselors of state. Allegations that there was a conversation that was meant to happen behind the scenes between Harry, Meghan, Charles, and maybe the Queen Consort of, like, hey, you know, we'll come back, but we want ABC, 1, 2, 3. We need a mediator to discuss all this. They want to have a big, you know, come to Jesus talk. And that clearly didn't happen. And apparently that didn't go over well. There's all of these discussions, you know, news outlets falsely reporting or maybe not reporting about Archie and Lilibet being prince or princess now, which that's another video for another time that we're going to get to in the next 2 weeks. But Charles has an uphill battle, especially now that he is officially king. A lot of people didn't want it to happen, but it is here. We've reached this. It's a big responsibility. How can we put a sort of tagline on today? How can we put a button on this chapter? From the American's perspective, it was a lot of vitriol. It was a lot of hurtful comments being spewed by everyone, including the traditional media, people not truly understanding or not wanting to understand, not wanting to participate. And that's their own prerogative, that's their own opinion. I can't tell you how to live your life. A lot of support and outpourings of condolence and support were coming up. But over here in America, it was a wild, wild week with reporting and news. And of course, I got really overwhelmed trying to keep up with it. because that's not truly what our content do. But what do you think will happen in the future with the king and Harry? You know, now he's going to just keep falling in that line of succession. Charles wants to have a small, slimmed down monarchy of those who are working. What do you think is going to happen there? Just let's have that discussion in the comments. What do you think is going to happen? But here with the podcast, we're going to have some more discussion-based shorter videos about certain subjects, about, you know, the title of Princess of Wales, Archie and Lilibet. I had some comedy content coming out down the pipeline I was really excited about, a few collaborations that I'm trying to schedule, but now that whole timeline is going to have to be reworked. But today's discussion and reflection, a lot of wonderful ceremony, a lot of wonderful protocol that was followed, very touching statements that really ripped at your heartstrings, very poignant statements, a lot of subtext through body language and reading between the lines that things still aren't good in the firm between now King and his children. But with that, everyone, thank you for coming to the end of today's podcast. I really, truly appreciate it. Check out all socials and links and sources for today are going to be down below. And hopefully I'll see you in the next one.